People always think that you always need to be the selfless person in order to make a difference. I think that we actually need to acknowledge that sometimes things start off selfishly and they grow into these beautiful things that you can share with other people.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Crazy Good Turns. We recognize and celebrate people who do crazy good things for others. I'm your host, Frank Blake, and today we are incredibly privileged, and I mean incredibly privileged, to have as our guests Michaela, she goes by Kaylee, and Zelda Mycroft. Zelda is Kaylee's mom, and I could take this entire episode just trying to give a summary of the extraordinary things that they have done, and particularly some of the extraordinary things that Kaylee has done. Here is just the briefest of summaries. The Kaylee Campaign is a nonprofit organization in South Africa and now the US that focuses on helping children with disabilities and normalizing society through education, advocacy, and events for the disabled. Kaylee herself, after whom the campaign is named, has had cerebral palsy from a very young age, I think about 9 months, but we'll correct that with Zelda if it needs to be corrected. A great quote from the organization is that physical intellectual impairment is self-evident and can be dealt with, whereas disability is created by the way in which society responds to the impairment. I mean, that is really worth thinking about. And I think, as you'll find through this podcast, that Kaylee and her organization challenges the way society responds to impairment. So welcome. Thank you very much, Kaylee and Zelda, for being with us.
Our pleasure.
Thanks, Frank.
Yes, thank you. So, Kaylee, I want to start with a question that isn't so much related to the campaign, but to you. And I read in the background material the extraordinary things you've done, including a 56-mile trek through some of the hilliest terrain in South Africa, ultramarathons, summiting Mount Kilimanjaro, competing in international dance competitions. How do you decide to take on these challenges?
Yeah, I think I don't always know how I get into these situations, but I think it's about saying yes to things. I've been raised to see my disability not as a barrier, but as an opportunity to do things differently and to kind of educate people about how they can also do things differently if they want to. I get to bring disability into the more mainstream parts of society, and I'm very lucky to have had these experiences and to have had the expectations placed on me that I do actually get involved in life and not just sit around and wait for it to happen to me.
Well, they're extraordinary. It's an extraordinary example for anyone. I mean, really, really amazing. And Zelda, let me ask you, as a parent, when you look back on Kaylee's childhood, did you see this always in her, or has this surprised you along the way?
Well, Kaylee was diagnosed with cerebral palsy when she was 11 months old. I think that was a great thing, because we never ever saw her from birth as a person with a disability. She was always our perfect child, and then she just had some challenges on top of that. And I think, is that not what happens with every parent? We see the potential in our children. We've raised Kaylee to always believe that anything is possible. It might just take longer to accomplish something, and she might have to find a unique way of doing it. I'm a former teacher as well, an educator. So the whole educational component of Kaylee living her life as a communication bridge, getting people to ask the questions that they didn't know about her impairment or how she lives her life, and then allowing that kind of dialogue to bring people on board as potential team members in her creating a special form of independence, which is an independence within a team. So that's pretty much been our philosophy.
That's very interesting. You mentioned the wheelchair, and Kaylee, since your diagnosis, you've spent your life in a wheelchair, starting with the manual wheelchair that needed to be pushed, and we're going to talk later about the campaign on motorizing the chair. But what was it like growing up in a manual chair?
I think that's a difficult question to answer. I've always been a disabled person. My whole life has been as a disabled person, and so I don't really have anything to compare living in a wheelchair to, so that's just how I understand the world. And so I think for me, living my life in a chair is normal. I think obviously there are challenges when you're not able to move yourself to where you want to go. That can be frustrating. I think a good example to kind of illustrate is that we were traveling recently and I wasn't able to get my motorized wheelchair, and so I was in a regular chair for the time that I was in the airport. And I think my mom always says that when I'm not in my motorized chair and I'm in a regular wheelchair, that my personality changes and I kind of become super introverted.
That's interesting.
Because actually I'm relying on other people then. I don't necessarily like people telling me what to do. So
that's true.
So having that be, having that taken away, I think it's really difficult. And so I think growing up, I only got my motorized chair when I was 9 years old. So up until that point, I was relying on other people and I couldn't fully express how I felt or what I wanted to do because it was dictated by other people. I couldn't be dramatic and leave a room. And I can now. I
like and she does.
Right.
I can't slam doors, but I can flounce dramatically, you know? And I think people underestimate the power of a chair to empower people to be their full selves.
So take us back to the moment where this idea first came to you, Kaylee, and what were the five of you doing, and how did you decide that you could actually raise the money?
I think people think that we had this aha moment of like, this is what we can do. But I think everything in our journey up to this point has been very organic and it involved a lot of people. So I went to the wheelchair shop to fix a seat or something, and they had a motorized wheelchair there that was my size, which was not really the standard. We had never seen them that small before, and so you always had to import them, and they were really expensive. So we were like, it's okay, we'll wait. And then I got in it. They were like, do you want to give it a go? And I said, yes, thank you. And I did it, and I didn't injure anybody. So that was good. And then I kind of realized, I was like, I need this in my life. But we couldn't afford it. So the manager at the store, Marta, she said, well, why don't you sell cookies and things to raise the money? And we sat with that for a day or two, and then I went to my sister and our friends, Justine and Talon and Chelsea, and we kind of brainstormed together what we would do, and we figured that selling things was the easiest we were ready to be in it for the long haul. We were like, it's going to take us 3 years, but we got it.
And, 3 years, you thought?
Well, I don't know. You know, you prepare for the
worst, yeah.
Yeah. And so we were ready to wait a while. I guess we can do the conversions later, but we also wanted to be, like, economic about things, and so we sold the cards for R3, which I don't know what
like
that 25 is.
25 cents, something.
Yeah.
And so R3 for a card, but we were like, if you want an envelope, you gotta pay extra. So, you know.
Oh, already an entrepreneur.
I'm Southern Yo-Yo Spirit for the win. But, we managed to raise the money in 7 weeks, and that was amazing. That our school got super involved, and our community got involved, and that was an amazing show of what people can do when you come together for a common purpose. Yeah, and now, 15 years later, here we are. So that's
amazing.
A really exciting journey that we've been on.
I think it bears mentioning that somebody wanted to donate a wheelchair after Kaylee got hers. And it was at that point that we got the children together and said, look, do you want to continue growing this? And they said, we do. And we then said that if you want to continue growing this, we have to formalize it as an NPO on the proviso that the five of you remain involved in continuing to grow what you started. So the girls were between the ages of 6 and 12 at the time of founding the organization. And from that time, they have come to every management committee meeting every quarter. And as they turned 18,
wow,
each of the girls now sits as a fully fledged board member. So their legacy is not only in having started it, but Terry, who was the 12-year-old 15 years ago, she's now our current board chairman, and all of them serve on the board. So it's that responsibility to, Kaylee said initially they thought they were in it for the long haul. They are.
We are. We're still here.
Longer than they can imagine.
The goal just changes, I think.
So that's truly the crazy good thing for others part of this, is having successfully done it, turning your focus to helping others. Was that just absolutely clear and dominant? What was your thought process? And this for either of you, really.
Well, I think that being an educator as well, once again coming back to the educational impact of something like this on your children's lives, from the get-go, we always said to Kaylee, you have got so much going for you that you have a responsibility to pay it forward. You are a bright kid. You've got a supportive family. You've got a circle of friends who are supportive. And you now have the responsibility to go and do it for others and to just get others to understand. That was part of it.
And Kaylee, did you just say, of course, that's right? Or did you think, well?
But I also think that it's important to mention that sometimes it's okay for things to start off with a selfish goal. Our entire purpose of the Kaylee campaign in the beginning was entirely for me. And then we were like, cool, we'll be done after that. People always think that you always need to be this selfless person in order to make a difference. And I think that we actually need to acknowledge that sometimes things start off selfishly and they grow into these beautiful things that you can share with other people.
Well said. So the Kaylee campaign has grown just tremendously in the years
just
since it started. You now are in the U.S. as well. Tell us about the growth and what are some of the things you've achieved along the way?
Well, we actually run 4 nonprofit organizations because we've had to diversify because funders don't really see the big picture that we see it.
Yeah, we're a little bit complex.
Yeah, so we're very holistic in our approach. So in 2010, we had to start a second NPO called the Cayley Sports and Recreation Club, which focuses on adaptive sports here in South Africa. And then 2 years ago, our arts and culture program, which had generated 4 professional theatre productions based on the work that we do, could no longer get funding because our sole focus isn't the arts. So we then started the Inclusive Arts Collective. And then in 2017, through meeting up with an amazing adaptive athlete from Philadelphia, we then investigated starting the Cayley Foundation from Philadelphia, where Jean Altamari lives. And I think that sometimes, you know, often people find a home in foreign places, if that sounds crazy.
Yeah.
And I think our maverick African messaging really resonated with Jean, because we kind of 0 to 100 in 3 minutes kind of people. And it really resonated with Jean, and I think that she also felt that a little bit of that urgency and that hey, we can do anything, you know, we're not overregulated. We're kind of Richard Branson kind of people, the screw it, let's do it kind of types. And I think that resonated
with
So
the next thing is for Cayley to go into outer space? Is that the...
No. Yeah. I'm perfectly happy on the planet. I think we just need to save the planet.
Yeah, so the Kales, maybe you want to speak about the 2 projects that were launched this year with our recent visit and with the Mexico thing.
Yes, please.
Are you talking about the summit?
Totally.
Okay, just got to be clear. So our U.S. foundation focuses a little bit more on adaptive sport, but also our first big project was taking an intercontinental delegation to the 17th World Summit of Nobel Peace Laureates in Mexico. And that was amazing to bring young people into that space and to prove to people that you can have intercontinental delegations coming together and becoming from very different perspectives, very different backgrounds, coming together and actually creating a family in that space. And the summit is phenomenal, that we as young people get to sit in spaces where there are Nobel Peace Laureates and speak to them and ask them things and argue with them. So that was awesome. And we're excited to take another group next year. And, you know, I think it's also about being open to opportunities that arise, because if we, at 15 years ago, said, no, we're just going to be doing assistive devices and that's okay, I think we had to be open to the opportunities that life offered us. We also have to recognize that life is about, it's about everything. It's not about just having one thing at a time. It's about how we engage with the world and how the world isn't designed for disabled people. So we have to fight on all platforms in all areas to actually have people with disabilities have equal access to the rights that we have on paper.
I think the important thing, Kales, we don't deal exclusively with people with disabilities.
Because that's not inclusion.
Yes, so that's exclusion. And also that most of the work around and inclusion needs to happen with supporters, non-disabled supporters. And our program, our ambassadors program, which is a leadership through social entrepreneurship program.
It's amazing.
We launched our first USA chapter at the Nobel Peace Summit with a group of scholars from Kingston High School in upstate New York. We've just been up to New York to see them as well.
Yeah, shout out to those guys.
Shout out to Kingston High.
Yes!
And also spend some time with Rheinbeck High students as well. And we're hoping to implement our second chapter at Rheinbeck High. But the importance about that is looking at how we can use, we don't call Kaylee a disability activist, we call her an ability activist, as well as all of us. We're all ability activists because that's what we choose to focus on. And bringing in leadership through social entrepreneurship, which is the way in which the Kaylee campaign was started, as a vehicle for leadership training, social leadership training, activism training, and using ability and disability rights as a springboard to speak about additional rights. Because sometimes someone like Kaylee, who has a visible impairment, is just such a wonderful catalyst to unpack so many other conversations around different forms of prejudice.
Is part of this conversation, I ask both of you to describe for our listeners maybe some of the ways your work has changed life for the disabled in South Africa or and elsewhere around the world.
Well, shall I start? In addition to what we're speaking about with our Ambassadors Program, this is for children between the ages of 9 and 17. And we have got 3 of our ambassadors who started the organization. They're under 16 years old. And I think that is, and they've got their own passions. They're focusing on things like Earth Warriors. There's one of our ambassadors who has 2 brothers who have impairments. She started an organization called Raising Hope SA. And she has a junior board supported by her mom. And she is, their focus is ability and inclusion as well. And then we've got Chris, who has started an organization called Swim for Change, who focuses on raising awareness and funds for mental health issues. We run our own inclusive preschool here in South Africa, and we also have a huge therapeutic outreach into the poorer communities, specifically looking at children with disabilities and their families and how we can support them.
I think one other powerful way that our advocacy and our activism is actually changing how people understand disability is that through my doing the Comrades Marathon and the advocacy that we had to do to actually have that happen, we entered and we got excited and we paid and we were planning our road to open. Then my partner sent a message like, guys, did you read the rules? Actually, wheelchairs are not allowed in this race. And so we kind of just didn't accept that as tolerable. And luckily for us in South Africa, we have a really good constitution that is very human rights based. And so we were lucky that we had that legal basis to argue that actually the only reason you're excluding me is because of my disability, and that's not allowed. And we had to advocate and fight with the organizers to actually allow myself and my fellow athletes to be allowed to enter the race. We were very determined to do it either way, so we were going to run unsanctioned if they continued to say no. But I think what is also powerful in that experience and in that story is that in the first year that we did it, they were very anti-us. People were very confused. There wasn't really that much support for us being there.
But Kaylee, that's also because we had to serve legal papers on them for them.
So we were not their favorite people. But now we're going into the 5th year of doing it, and last year it kind of changed completely. Sometimes it takes a while for people to get on board with what's happening, and sometimes you have to just keep going back to things. It was very intimidating in the beginning because we knew that they were watching us. and very blatantly watching us to see if we did anything against the rules so that they could say that we broke them. But I think sometimes you have to be persistent, and people get on board, and sometimes it's just about having a conversation.
And now, presumably, they're quite proud of it.
Yeah, now it only took us 4 years to get there.
But Kaylee, I also think two astounding spin-offs of serving legal papers and fighting in 2016. The first is that the rules of Athletic South Africa have been changed to incorporate a section on wheelchair athletes in road running. So that is a nice tangible shift that was only created through our advocacy. And then the second thing was, after fighting with the Comrades Marathon organizers in 2016, in 2017, Jean El-Tamari wanted to enter as a self-propelled wheelchair athlete from Philadelphia. She was told no. She contacted us, and we then advocated on her behalf to get her to be the first self-propelled wheelchair athlete
to finish.
So that was a second moment in history, but it's that advocating around her doing the Comrades that led to the founding of the Kaylee Foundation USA. Sometimes you have to just bite that bullet. And, you know, we believe sometimes you have to tickle with a feather, sometimes you have to beat with a stick.
So
that was our beating with a stick moment.
Legislation is helpful for that.
So a question for both of you. What do you think the future holds for the Kaylee campaign and all the associated activities?
World domination.
Pinky in the brain. No.
World domination. Great answer.
I don't know. I think as activists, I remember we went to something, and this is very clear what I'm about to say. I went to an event, and somebody, the whole thing in the one discussion was, how do we work ourselves out of a job? And that's amazing. If we can work ourselves out of a job when you don't need to actually be an activist, because everybody has access to everything and their rights are all like respected and stuff. I think that would ultimately be amazing.
What a wonderful answer.
I don't know if we're going to get there in our lifetimes, but, you know, it's a good thing to kind of aim for. You aim high and you get...
You aim high and you get as close as you can. And I think, you know, just a spin-off of your comment, Kaylee, world domination, I'm actually with that. I'm with you on that one. I would say that it's changing the world one conversation at a time, because you might not change the world in numbers, but you're changing one person's world at a time. And whether it's changing the perception of ability in one person, whether they be a person with an impairment or a normatively abled human, that's the way to go. One of the things that we say is that you can't learn inclusion, you have to live it.
So if you could, and again, both of you, if you could pass on one message to our listeners, what would that be?
Just one.
Edit yourself, Kaylee.
Okay, Mom, you go.
Thank you for passing that difficult one.
Yeah. I passed the bus.
Thanks, doll. I think that, and I'm going to give it from a mother's perspective, I think that so often mothers feel they take on the full responsibility of a child who has challenges, and I would say to moms and to parents, be brave and let your child be a part of other people's lives and have expectations of other people to get involved. There's the saying, it takes a village to raise a child, and I feel that is particularly pertinent when you have a child with various challenges, because it's you need more than just a mom who feels sometimes that she has to be a martyr, that this is her responsibility and she takes that on as her responsibility. So let go of your child, get out of your child's way so that your child can grow a network of people who understand what's needed and who challenge your child, for your child to become fully integrated in a broader sense with more people in their lives. We find that in our work, that when somebody hits 18 years old, and there are many programs that finish for children with disabilities when they are 18, then they become very lonely and isolated. You need to be a resilient parent to grow a resilient child to be able to fit into the world where they can make a difference and be a catalyst for change.
Excellent. And Kaylee, any one message?
I think that my message is kind of linked to that, I think. As a disabled person, I think it's important to... I think you can apply this to if you're normatively abled as well, is that if you have to actually claim your vulnerabilities in a very special way and be open about them, because I'm lucky in that a lot of my vulnerabilities are very obvious to people because I'm in a wheelchair. You can see that I have a situation going on and you're clearly going to help me with something. But in the experiences that I've had to actually become way more vulnerable with how I feel about things and letting people into my life and my emotions. And if I want to have an experience, then I need to bring that person into my experience of what we're doing. So, for example, when I did my first cycle tour, I'm very appreciative that I don't have a helicopter mom who wants to be there every 5 seconds and, like, help me with everything and wipe my nose and, like, have every possible supply that I could ever need. My mom and my whole family has kind of, like, let me go into spaces where people don't really know what they're doing, and I have to claim my knowledge of myself. When I did Kilimanjaro, I went with people who had no previous experience of working with a disabled person. And I think doing that actually opens me up to new experiences and trusting that people are actually capable of rising to support you when you need them, instead of just saying, oh, this is my problem as the person living with a disability. Nobody wants to deal with this drama. But actually, I have found that way more people are willing to go on that journey with you if you invite them.
That is wonderful. I have one last question out of my curiosity. Maybe impossible to answer, but cool. My curiosity is, so Kaylee, you have earned just an incredible number of awards. The International Children's Peace Prize.
Yeah.
You've been named, as you mentioned, a Nobel Peace Laureate in 2012. You've won the World of Children Award. Last year, you were a member of the very first class of Obama Foundation leaders.
Yeah.
Is there one of these that you're the most proud of achieving?
You know, I don't think I can say that, because every award that you... First of all, I think... the awards are for the work. It's not for me as an individual to raise me up on a pedestal. I think it's about presenting the work that we do and supporting the sort of the mission. But every award that I've received has been at a very particular time in my life, and I learn different things from them, and I get to have different experiences and different opportunities from all of them in different ways. And so I think having all the awards and having my name on things is very cool. But I think as an activist, it's important to go into things not to get awards, but to gain experience and knowledge and connect with other people in meaningful ways so that you can continue to do the work that you got the award for.
That is such the perfect answer. And I have to say, it has been such a privilege having you and Zelda, having you on the podcast. You really are such great exemplars of doing crazy good things for others. And one last thing, where's the best place for our audience in the U.S. to learn about you and help in what you're doing?
Yes, our website is kayleyfoundation.org, and Kaylee spelled C-H-A-E-L-I. So it's kayleyfoundation.org. We have a Facebook page that is called Kaylee Foundation USA, and with the same name, Instagram and
Twitter,
as well as Twitter. So
on all them socials.
On all them socials.
Thank you so much. Honestly, this has been one of my most favorite episodes. I am truly awestruck by what you've done. I mean, to think back and think of, you know, a campaign to raise money for one motorized wheelchair that you thought might take 3 years, and where you are now. I know you both, you're very humble about what it took to get there, but what an extraordinary journey. And so much more to do.
Absolutely.
Always.
Thank you so much, yeah. Frank.
Thanks, Frank.
Thank you, Kaylee and Zelda Mycroft. Truly exceptional people doing crazy, crazy good turns for others. I encourage you to visit their website, the Kaylee Foundation. That's CHAELIFoundation.org. I think you'll learn a lot and be inspired. Our show is recorded at Listen Up Studios in Atlanta. Thank you, Greg. Editing by Stephen Key and mixing by Score a Score in Los Angeles. Special thanks to our production team of Brian Sabin and Megan Hanlon. Until next time, this is Frank Blake thanking you for listening and celebrating another crazy good turn.